This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 581. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by my orange co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming at koop.org. And during the pandemic, folks, we are pre-recorded. Stick with us.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. This world, oh yeah. There's a kind of a girl who can send your heart whirling away. But those are the kind you don't happen to find every day.
It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. On the show today, we have Andrea Ariel of the Andrea Ariel Dance Theater, and later we'll be talking to Heartland Theater Collective. And also, this is the beginning of our month-long membership drive. This will all be done virtually this year, and then we will have news and views of the world of theater in just a few places, because we're not going to have a lot of time to talk. But stick with us. We'll be back after this.
Eyes make your confidence rise like a rocket that's ready to blow. Then she might be one of your great ones. Don't let her go. Now you know instantly when one of your three comes along. 'Cause she gazes at you, and it's like you can do nothing wrong. All the sweet ones, the slight ones, the close but not quite ones. With them, you just get what you see. But the great ones, kid, what they're showing you is the man you could be. And this girl could be one of the great ones.
Nicole, that was Nick Cordero and a troupe of about probably 40 other people. I didn't count.
I think it was a big group.
It was a big group singing one of the great ones. There was a tribute on Broadway. Oh my God. Broadway On Demand that was for Nick Cordero, who of course was the actor who was in... kind of keep wanting to say Bullets Over Broadway. Oh, what's the name of the latest one
he was in Rock of Ages in L.A. That's what he was doing.
This was one of the great ones. Was that movie that I didn't like?
Taz Pomerani. Yes. Taz Pomerantz.
Yes.
Goodness, we had it on our. We had it on the tour, yes, for Broadway.
It was running. I thought, wasn't it running when it got shut down? I don't know. Anyway, but he played the lead role in that. And that song that we just played, one of the great ones, is from that. We'll figure it out at some point before we get off the air. Anyway,
oh my God.
He contracted COVID-19, was on a ventilator, went into a coma, or was put into a coma, and never really came out. What was it, Nicole?
Bronx Tale.
Bronx Tale. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
I'm like Fordham University. What's the name of that? Oh my God, I'm having an issue today.
I know, me too. So, well, you know, it's blame it on COVID.
It's Monday.
Blame it on Star Wars.
No, I'm not blaming it on Star Wars.
Because the audience can't see this, but I can. She's got a Star Wars mug that she's drinking out of. Folks, this is our membership drive. It's going to be a month long. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it for the first couple of weeks, but we wanted to let you know that it's up. We have a theme of standing up for our community this year. So please go to koop.org and give. We do have thank you gifts. We have a mask this year, oddly enough, For a $60 one-time gift or $10 a month. Then, of course, you add a T-shirt to that for an $80 or $15 a month, and then a baseball cap added to that for $125 or $25 a month. So head on over to koop.org and give to your community radio station. We need it now more than ever.
That's a lot of cool swag this year. So I have a question for you with the membership drive. Do we know what the image is this year?
That's a good question. I don't know, but we'll probably know when we really ramp up in on the third week of the month. So that'll add a certain amount of anticipation. I should say, which we've never spent any time talking about, which we've been doing this for almost 6 months now, that we're pre-recording this. We pre-record on Monday before our Wednesday show. And we've been calling these homegrown. Oh, no, I now forgot the word that co-op uses. But anyway, the vast majority of our programmers have done this. And so our station, which is closed, is maintaining the programming that we always had, or close to what we always had, by programmers on their own recording in their homes. Many of us have invested in home studio equipment.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I've been blown away by everybody and what they've been doing at home and the show still creating. It's you would think we were all still in the station.
Yep. So there was an article in the Observer today that said that without rent relief, 60% of New York City's independent theaters may close for good. And you know, that we had talked several months ago about the hashtag program in New York about Stop the Rent. It'll be here in the article. But I think that that's pretty telling about the support that theater arts get in this country.
Extremely telling. You mean the lack thereof?
The lack thereof. Well, and I understand it to a certain extent, because people go, you know what, there's real problems out there. There's war, there's Black Lives Matter, there's all these things. I really can't deal with the fact that people can't get on stage. But if you dig down, as you know, there are real benefits to a strong creative class and a strong creative culture, from, you know, education all the way to feeding people's souls. And that's, I mean, of course we're biased, but that's equally important in my mind.
Well, I mean, it's also people who are exposed to the arts excel in math and science. I mean, there's so many reasons, and you are correct. I feel torn at times, because I'm like, people need to pay rent and do other, and live. And there's other things that are at the forefront above the arts. But yet, I just feel like the conversation isn't there.
Right. I would hope that people could, like, flash forward in their mind 3 or 4 years when we've lost all these cultural institutions and they want a little theater in their life. They're going to have more difficulty, and it will cost more for them to go.
Yes.
A little thing called
shaking my head in the video, and the viewers can't see that, but yes.
No, they can't. As we admonish many of our guests, that video, shaking your head doesn't work on radio.
I'm calling myself out here on it.
You are. You're good. So that article will be on the website at offstageonair.com on the show notes for this show. There's also an article about, and I wasn't able to read the whole thing. This is going to kind of be an NPR show, but NPR did a thing called A Chinese Raisin in the Sun. Did you see this?
No, I did not see this. I didn't even see the headline or this article, like nothing.
I'm pretty sure I got it from Broadway Briefing, or I might have seen it. I don't know where I saw it. Anyway, but there's a NPR article on it, which you can find at offstageonair.com. And it chronicles a company in China doing a production of Raisin in the Sun. And as it turns out, I did not know this. So there have been many shows, American shows done in China featuring black people. And guess what they have done historically?
Tell me.
Blackface.
Yeah, see, I discovered that when I was in Hong Kong, actually.
Yeah. So this doesn't do that, but I think it's very interesting when you take something like A Raisin in the Sun, which is about an impoverished black family in Chicago, and how does that translate? I mean, take the skin color out of the equation. How does that translate in China? I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know. I guess the same way a Chinese story would be told, like, how would we look at that?
Well, you know? But when we take things like Miss Saigon and things like that, there's an American bent to most things we see.
Yeah, but that's an American show still.
Right, I know. So I don't know how many times that we see, and for instance, we see the Scottish company that comes here all the time that you and I love.
National Theatre of Scotland.
Yes, love them. And those stories are Scottish. But we can relate to those a little bit because we have a shared common language. I think we understand that culture a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I think that if a Chinese play came over and translated it and plopped it into American shores, I think American audiences might have a problem with it, relating to it. I don't know. But interesting thing about this is the man who did it had done a translation really in his younger years. He did a translation of Raisin in the Sun, and then he lost it or it was destroyed in a fire. And I apologize for not knowing enough about this because I read it and then subsequently forgot it because I'm a million years old. But then he wanted to do it, couldn't find that translation, and they made a retranslation. So there's a translation from the 60s shortly after it came out, and then now there's this new translation, which is I found sort of interesting.
So I want to know, like, where do you go to find out? Who's keeping track of, like, what plays are translated into what languages?
I don't know. That'd be interesting. There should be a clearinghouse.
Right?
This translator's, by the way, his name is Wu Shi Liang.
That's a cool name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that that's interesting. There is a link on our website, offstageonair.com, to the article, the written and the transcript, as well as you can listen to it. There's a little play button. You just push the button.
That's very color purple.
All right. Let's talk about our first guest.
We had some great guests this week. I'm excited.
We did. We had fun talking to our guests. And our first guest is our good friend, Andrea Ariel. And I love talking to her.
She made my day. Some of the things I learned about her that I thought I knew her and I didn't know her, like, she made my day.
Don't give it away because it's in the interview.
Oh, I'm not.
But it's pretty amazing too. I will say this, it has to do with film. And I rewatched that film coincidentally a few weeks ago and saw her name in the credits.
Oh, so you knew that then?
I had forgotten until she mentioned it again during this thing. But I did. I went and said, I remember, when I talked to Andrea again, I have to tell her how much I love that movie. And that in piques the folks' interest in listening to this interview. Shall we jump into it?
Let's do it.
Here it is. All right, Nicole, we have somebody waiting in the Zoom machine. You ready to go check them out?
I am.
Okay, let's open the hatch and see. Do you want to do the honors?
Oh, this is exciting. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead and open the hatch. Ah! It's Andrea Ariel. How are you?
Hey, hello. Hello. Thank you for having me on, Lisa, Nicole.
I'm so thrilled to see you in our Zoom.
Thanks. It's fun to see you. I miss seeing people so much.
I know. Well, we're actually taking the Zoom machine to get it retrofitted with a hug.
Oh, that's awesome. I think that's a grand idea.
We'll be able to take care of that.
Yeah.
So, of course, Andrea Ariel with Andrea Ariel Dance Theater. And you have a very interesting project coming up. Reimagine 30 Years Reimagined.
Yes.
So,
We do.
Tell us about it.
Yes. We started out with this idea for a show called Reimagine. It's our 30-year anniversary here in Austin, Texas. And I wanted to do something special, and I thought it would be very fun to look back through older work and create new work, that I would be reimagining the works with the new company, the current company. And I worked with Graham Reynolds for maybe over 10 shows.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with that person.
Yeah, right. Everybody knows Graham.
Everybody does.
It was like from 99 to 2012, we did over 10 collaborations together. And over all those years, we were both developing our work, and there's a lot of threads of his compositions that were through my work as well. And so I thought how fun it would be to use all Graham's music to reimagine pieces from the past repertory and some new pieces.
So the pieces, I'm sorry to interrupt, but some of the pieces that you are reimagining, you are changing from the original music to Graham's music. Did I hear that correctly?
Correct. Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. That was really a fun process, and you'll get to witness that in our premiere. But the big announcement is that I'm so excited to say that the Long Center is going to be presenting us for our premiere. And
oh, wonderful.
This is very exciting news. Yes, through the Long Center Create virtual event. And so people can go to longcenter.org to find out information and be able to get to the link on the day of the premiere. But coming back to the creative process, Reimagine has a whole new meaning now. The word reimagine. So, after rehearsals were suspended in early March, within like a couple weeks, we realized our show was going to be postponed too. And so I sort of recovered, picked myself up, and got the dancers together on Zoom to recreate the show, what we could do of the show, through the virtual medium. So we started rehearsing on Zoom, and over the next 3 months during shelter in place, the company rehearsed virtually to recreate them in their homes and their personal spaces.
So you are reimagining three of your reimagined pieces.
Yes, we actually added a fourth one too. So
Rooms.
I used to call it Rooms, but it's actually called Home. That's why I said Rooms. But another piece that we are recreating is called Getting Dressed. It's a fun little short piece to Graham Reynolds' Pencil Song. And throughout my work, there are these certain threads of, I would call them maybe like physicalities or, particular thread themes. And one of them is putting on clothes and taking off clothes. And, there's a lot of pieces that I've had where there's a reason for putting on clothes, certain costumes or, things to become characters in a way. And so getting dressed is sort of a reflection of being in this isolated place. And I had them gather huge amounts of clothes and it's a score, so it is choreographed, but they're getting dressed as if we're going out into the world. So that was going to be part of the show, which leads us into an archival piece called Life's a Circus from 1996. And so then in the film, you'll see some archival footage of that. And then we go to Stripping Away, which is really sort of a more private, personal piece that... It's sort of about taking off all the exterior characters of ourselves, all the things that we put on for whatever reason, for social, more private, like taking those things away and coming down to the soul of yourself. And so that's one of the recreations we did. And then Crossings was originally, it's about going out in the world, right? Our daily comings and goings and the pathways we have, and how you start seeing certain people. If you do this every day, this time you see certain people, and eventually sometimes you have a conversation, or sometimes you become friends, or you help each other, things like that. So obviously that piece was not possible to recreate in the way it would have been. However, what I decided to do was to work with this concept of vectors. That's a film concept. It really explores a three-dimensional space within this two-dimensional box that we're all now living in. And I had the dancers create all these different pathways with movement in their spaces, in their different rooms, in their outdoor spaces. And then I took, and they got to choose their vectors. So, you know, like if you were coming from a back diagonal forward, or if you're coming across, you know, it creates this three-dimensionality of existence in this space. So they made a bunch of films of their different crossings, and then the choreography became editing their vectors together.
Sure.
So like my whole concept of choreography right now is it's sort of like in editing world, because that's the only way I can do it. So it turned out cool. Yeah.
And that is a thing. That is part of the creative art of choreography as well. Especially when you're dealing in a two-dimensional medium as we are. So that sounds fascinating.
Fascinating.
I do love the idea of when you first started talking about crossings and going to places that you do every day. I spent some time on a train every day from Tarrytown to Manhattan. And I observed the little societies that were created by the people that are on this train every day at the same time. And you're right. They all have their thing. They don't know each other, but they have things. It was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think definitely.
That's fascinating. So had you ever, so this is very much like, or kind of like choreographing for film in a weird way. Have you done that before?
Oh, I've done a lot of film, actually. I've worked with Dolly Parton. I've worked with Christopher Guest. My claim to fame is Waiting for Guffman.
Let's talk about Reimagined once again. We are pre-recording this on the 4th of September. Your show drops on the 12th of September, which is a week and one day. Where are you in the process at this point?
Ah, good question. We are editing like crazy. I'm writing a curtain speech because we're going to record a little curtain speech. I want it to feel like you're going to a show and there's a curtain speech and then it goes from one piece to the other. And that we'll use titles to help guide everybody through that. We have everything assembled and all the pieces that we recreated pretty much completed. I just reviewed the last one last night, and I'm super happy with the editing. Colin Lowry has done all the editing, and he's done a beautiful job. He's had to learn to sort of work with me a little more than usual. Usually I'm like, here, edit this, make something beautiful. But this I had to say, oh, this has to go here, and this has to go here. So we've really had to collaborate together to make it. So we're very close. Yeah.
Wonderful. Talking about the rehearsal process, we talk about dance as an art form and how important it is for the creativity and the energy for us all to be in the room together. How did your dancers adapt to doing this in this new virtual environment?
Well, I think, you know, I found that the more we kept rehearsing, and then these post-it dance experiments were sort of like, they're like ensemble building. It kind of comes mm-hmm. from a game that we might do in the studio when we're developing material. We'll stand in a circle and a dancer will start with an idea and then pass it to the next person, and they take that idea and develop it wherever they want, and then pass it to the next. And it goes all the way around back to the first person who finds an ending. So it's a very great way to connect your ensemble and develop material together. So the post-it dance experiments were about developing that ensemble sense in virtual world. So we basically put little post-its over the cameras, and one by one they come in and do a solo and then passes it to the next person. And we had to pick an order, obviously. So, but I think that as we did this work and we kept rehearsing, I felt like we started to get really connected somehow. And also playing a lot with the depth, you know, like we were playing a lot with coming close into the camera and going far away and making tableaus together, you know, so all of these things, I think, created an opportunity for us to connect despite the fact that we weren't in the space together. Of course, that's better, and we missed that terribly, but they're pros. They did a great job taking the choreographic scores and creating with them. They just really, they're courageous. I feel, you know, very courageous and generous to use their personal spaces for the stage.
Great.
But you know, the other thing that's really great is, you know, they're home with their family, so their kid might walk in, their pet comes in, joins into the video for a moment, you know, and so there's a lot of that going on too, and we sort of just started to embrace it. It's like, you know, this is reality, and this is what it's like, you know.
How many cast members are there?
There are six. May I name them? Or?
Please.
Okay, so
then
it's...
we have to wrap up because we're running out of time.
Well, one thing that's super exciting is two dancers who danced with me in the early 2000s are back dancing with me again. Great. And that's super exciting for a 30-year anniversary. Whitney Obao and Ceci Proger. Luis Ordaz. Rebecca McLinden Blanchard. Kevin Armstrong and Sandy Donzica. So they're fabulous. I can't wait for you all to see it.
I can't wait to see them either. And so this will happen on the 12th, which is this coming Saturday for those people listening right now. And people can get information at thelongcenter.org and I assume on your website as well.
Yes, both places. But to, when you view it, you can always get that at thelongcenter.org for sure, because there's a page there for it, yeah.
Andrea Ariel, thank you once again for joining us at Offstage on the Air. We just love having you here.
Oh, gosh, thanks so much for having me. It was really fun. Nice
I'm
to see you, too.
Looking forward to seeing the show.
All right, thank you. Bye. All right, bye-bye.
Andrea Ariel, we love her.
I love her.
I love how she was set to do Reimagine and then had to do Reimagined.
Yeah, that is kind of, you know what, it almost added a whole nother level of the Reimagined to the Reimagined. I kind of think it's brilliant. It's double brilliant.
And we didn't get much into this in the interview, but to take a piece that you have already set on a piece of a particular piece of music and reset that same choreography to a different piece of music, I'm in awe of seeing what that looks like. Anyway, we have to take a break. Remember, Co-op is in the process of its membership drive. So please go to koop.org and hit the Donate Now button. We will be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole.
You can donate to Co-op right now by going to koop.org and supporting us during our membership drive in the fall, which is all virtual this year. And we have a theme of standing up for our community, which I think is something that Nicole and I do on a regular basis.
I know. I was just, normally I get to go in the room and get my card. I'm like, I have to go online and be like everyone else this year with my pledge.
That's right.
You know what? I'm good to do it.
Me too. So I want to play just a little intro to this next piece.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, when the pandemic struck, the multi-billion dollar theater industry went dark, shutting down shows mid-production and preventing new shows from ever opening. But this summer, a small group of actors tried to bring the theater back to life. My colleague, Michael Paulson, tracked their journey. It's Friday, September 4th.
So that was The Daily, and I'm a big Daily fan. I listen to it every day.
I always want to dance with the opening music.
Yeah, well, and I love the way he says, and this is what else you need to know today.
You need to know today.
Anyway, did you listen to the whole article?
I got almost through it. I haven't listened. I have like just a little bit left at the very end.
It was very interesting. It was chronicling the Berkshire's Theater Company production of Godspell. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this I had heard before because there were articles about it, but it was just interesting talking about how they went through it. And it's on the daily, which means a lot of people are hearing about it. And to remind folks, at that time, which was not all that long ago, but only two companies in the United States were given permission by Equity to perform, both in the Berkshires. And Godspell was going to perform, and the one was outside, and this one, the Godspell, was set to be inside, but the city or the state said they couldn't do it, so it went outside as well. But they had a lot of things that they had to do it. And I'm not going to rehash them here because we've done that before. But I would, I think people would really enjoy listening to that daily episode.
Yeah, it was really cool. I know. I text you like, I listen to it every day. I'm like, I know, Lisa, but I wanted to make sure you saw what this one was.
Yes. It wasn't lost on me, the significance of something. And I think I'm hoping that a lot of those listeners, when they hear him talk about the multi-billion dollar industry that is theater, that people will understand the loss of income of working people that have been deemed non-essential, which kind of hurts.
It is a big punch in the gut, isn't it?
It kind of is. But we kind of understand it. But the Godspell and the one person show that I can't remember the name of, and the Berkshires is doing, they're both doing very well. And we talked either last week or the week before last of the three other companies in, I think, all in the Northeast and small towns in Vermont and other places that have been given permission by Equity to do things. And the one thing I will remind people that I just think is an interesting fact is that the musicals that are going to be there are doing them without woodwinds or brass instruments.
Great. I still am mind boggled by that. I'm still, you know, I've been fascinated that they have Phantom of the Opera open in Seoul, Korea, and that it's been going open, and I'm still just following the journey of it. It fascinates me.
How is South Korea doing with coronavirus in general?
Oh, they have outbreaks. They're not.
Are they as bad as we are?
So well. Although they just had a tsunami hit, so the numbers I haven't gotten as well, but they're still high up there. I don't have exact numbers.
Yeah. Well, good for them. I mean, London, Great Britain is starting to open up theaters as well. So we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Phantom's been open for like 3 weeks. They've been having K-pop concerts of 3,000 people. I'm like, oh, okay. But it's just been interesting, the protocols for the theater. So I've been watching this Phantom because they keep updating specifically and telling us what's changed, and just interesting to know.
There's an article in New York Times. Was it today? It's written by Maya Phillips. Oh no, this is a few days ago. I remember seeing it. Maya Phillips, why Rent the movie was my gateway musical. It piqued my interest because
really
that film was not very good. And I had such high hopes for it. And I remember when I saw the opening scene, which was very theatrical and very amazing, I said, this is going to be great. This is going to be just like Chicago. And you can't see what Nicole's doing, but she's doing that thing with her hand. And then it just went downhill from there. That was what, 10 years ago or so, 2005, more than 10 years ago, almost 15 years ago. As I've been watching reruns, I'm kind of liking it more and more. But I think it's more about the music and just tying into that time frame.
This, I like it better than I do Chicago, the musical.
Oh, we will get into a debate about that at some other time, because Chicago, the musical, was amazing, in my opinion.
Zellweger had no business playing Roxy.
We've had a lot of discussion about the actors, but I, as a film, and let's face it, film is more of a medium of the director than it is of the performers. So there was a lot to be forgiven. That being said, I did not mind Renee Zellweger in the role. But this was interesting about this young girl who was young at the time. She watched Rent with her mom on TV. They had a bootleg DVD of it that they watched of the film, not of the performance. And she got into it, and it's very interesting. She was from the suburb, she was from the suburbs in Long Island. It doesn't say it, but it sounds like she was relatively well off. It sounds like they weren't hurting for money. And these communities and issues that were brought up by Rent that were very real, i.e. class differential, HIV AIDS, all these things that were watered down by the movie. And I didn't realize this till I read this thing.
Yes, they are.
The Christmas number was cut from the movie.
Yeah, I was pissed.
So the difference in class was really just Taye Diggs's character and the poor, starving, romantically starving artists that were there. Mm-hmm. So it was really a very watered down picture of an issue that shouldn't be watered down.
No, and it defeats the whole purpose, because that's why they can't pay their rent. Like, the whole disparaging, and I'm like, they cut all the class stuff from. Yeah, that was a big thing I had with the film.
Yeah, I didn't go there, but I did now. And so she was just talking about her own ignorance about what she just loved about the film. She loved the scrappy group of actors, the community in the HIV support group, all this stuff was very, the La Vie Boheme was just this great rallying cry for her with starving artists. She didn't get the real issues behind all that stuff till much later in her life. I just thought it was an interesting observation that she made.
That is interesting. I wonder, you know, now that you know, seeing that before seeing the stage play, I guess I could see all that.
Well, but even then, if you saw the stage play, if your mind, like I could see myself, who grew up very privileged myself and very protected, seeing the play at that point in my life, I might not see it either, just because it's not anything that I could grasp. It wasn't part of my reality. I didn't see it in my day-to-day life. And I didn't need to understand all that stuff because I was being protected by my parents. So I might not have seen it even then. But yeah, the movie is much, much more guilty of that than the stage play. Although the stage play, I wish I could remember. It took some flack at the time, and I'd forgotten about it. Oh, it was around, I think it was around HIV and AIDS. I forgot what it was, but there were some issues when the play came out that people were not happy about, but I'll have to go back and reread and update people next week. I didn't either, so I was just reading the article.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the Zoom machine, which has been having some issues
lately.
And it's feeling it. It's got some issues right now. And let's go talk to those folks at Heartland Theater Collective about their current project that's about to come out, which is a radio play called Passage. You want to listen?
I do.
Here it is. Nicole?
Lisa?
I hear you have ESP, and you know that the Zoom machine has not been properly functioning.
Well, a lot of things haven't been properly functioning.
That's true. It's crazy in this COVID. So let's see if it can work, because I think we have something going on today. So let's give it a shot, shall we?
Helmets on, ready to go.
Darn it, didn't work. Let me try futzing with this knob and see if I can get this to go. Here I go. Look who we have. Woo! We have the Heartland Theater Collective here on the show.
Yee-hoo! This so is exciting.
So we have the co-founder of Heartland, Marion Kansas. Hi, Marion.
Hello. Thank you.
Welcome to the show. This is your first time on.
Yes, very excited to be here.
Yes, and we have a veteran of Offstage and On the Air and director extraordinaire, Rosalind Ferris. Hi, Rosalind.
Hi.
Welcome to the show again. So we are pre-recording this as we do during COVID. So we're happy to have Heartland on for the very first time.
On the first.
So both Marion and Rosalind were nodding, which absolutely does not work on the radio.
Sorry. I was giving you my air horn effect.
So later on in the show, Marion, I want to hear a little bit about Heartland. Tell our listeners all about the show. But right now we're here to talk about Passage, the new radio play that you guys are just about to kick off here. Why don't you tell us about it?
Sure. So Passage is a new devised radio play that we started working on several months ago. There was 9 of us total, and we collaboratively came up with the story, wrote the play together, and then recorded it. So we're really excited to be sharing it. And the play is about a group of astronauts on a ship who are trying to find some new habitable planets, but on the way get sucked into a black hole that are trying to figure out how to survive and what that means for them.
Story of my life. So I know, you know, having devised pieces myself, that is really getting people in a room to come up with ideas and thoughts, and usually involves a lot of improv. But today we're zooming everything. How was the process over? I'm assuming you did it virtually.
Yes. Yeah. All of our meetings were virtual. I thought it went surprisingly well. It did take maybe a little more prep work on the end of our producing team or the directing team, because we had to make sure we always had something to do. We couldn't do that thing that you normally do in device processes where you're like, just get up on your feet. Let's just try something, because that didn't quite work.
I mean, if you could, it would be just party for one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it went surprisingly well, but we leaned a lot more heavily towards like writing or storytelling exercises, sometimes as individuals, sometimes as groups, rather than more improv group exercises you would normally do in person.
Yeah, I thought it was really remarkable. I mean, that's a lot of people for a Zoom call. I mean, especially when, especially a lot of creative people who, you know, often have ideas they are very excited to share. And that can, I think in a lot of circumstances, that would have created a lot of crosstalk and stuff, but I was really astonished by this group. Like, yeah, there was just a lot of patience and space given to everyone in the room. So, it was easier than I could possibly have imagined, honestly.
Awesome. That's so great.
Rosalind, are you, did you direct this piece?
I co-directed.
Co-directed with Marion?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Which is exciting, because the last time, I'd worked with Heartland once before as an actor and had just a tremendous experience. Yeah, so I was originally reached out to you about just being part of the devising team. And then, yeah, as we worked, I was, Marion was kind enough to invite me to join the directing team as well.
That is wonderful. And this will be performed on Zoom?
It'll be recorded and released live via YouTube. But then it'll be available on a bunch of other streaming platforms. We're trying to put it everywhere. So
awesome. So who are some of the other key players here?
Nicole Oglesby, who's also our other co-founder of Heartland Theater Collective. She was another deviser, collaborator, performer, and also sort of served as a script supervisor kind of person. We all collaboratively wrote together, but she sort of oversaw that whole process. And I'll go through everyone super quickly. Katie Max, another producer.
This 10 minutes is yours to use as you wish, so just take your time.
Well, I would love to use that 10 minutes to shout out this wonderful team. So we also have, Katie Matz, another producer for Heartland, as well as actor, advisor, collaborator. We have Will Douglas, Brooke Ashley Eden, Brennan Patrick, Ronan Malomo, Rosalind.
I know. I'm
Brady Harold.
I'm like looking at
it. I really count everyone.
Like, oh God, I don't want to forget anyone.
You're thinking about where they are in the box when you have your Zoom.
Right, yeah.
So are the two of you performing in it as well?
We are. Yeah. We got to do the old switcheroo where it'd be like one rehearsal, I would be acting and it would be directing me. And then the next day, or sometimes even it would be like 7 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Right.
Marion directs me. And then we take a fiver and then we come back and it's like opposite, baby.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the roles that you're performing in. Marion, tell us about your role.
Sure. So I play Captain Julie Covington, who is the captain of the ship. her sort of deal is that you can tell she's relatively new to being higher up in her rank to captaining, and she really, really wants this mission to go well. But very quickly, everything turns south. So it's a lot of her having to deal with her expectations of herself versus what is actually happening. It's a lot of fun. I haven't acted in a while, so it's been a really, really great experience.
Yeah, I went through that myself last year. It was very interesting. And Rosalind, who are you playing?
I'm playing a pilot, Nora, and you know, I showed up and said I want to play a gay person again, and they said, "Great." I have the one thing I like to do, and it's play women realizing they're gay in real time. And so I did.
But it's the year of LGBTQ, so you're good.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, yeah, just gotta, you know, free therapy. It's great.
So when I think of I'm gonna call it science fiction, because that's what comes to mind. Mm-hmm. There's usually a very vivid soundscape that happens. Has this been sound designed?
Yes, it has.
Excellent sound designer named Miles Foster Greenwood, who also has some film and television experience sound designing. So he put together some really, really beautiful stuff. We just got our final edits like last night.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So when you, so we got the sci-fi aspect of this, but would you classify this as a comedy, tragicomedy?
Dramedy,
biopic.
Rom-com. I mean, come on, what is it?
I think dramedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Or maybe even like just straight up drama.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of different, because it's about this whole crew's life on this ship in this moment of crisis. Like there's all these different threads of people reacting to the crisis and also dealing with their own personal, interpersonal drama. And so there are threads of humor, but also a lot of threads of self-discovery and then old-fashioned sci-fi drama of like, we're going into a black hole. That's probably not good.
I did it yesterday. It was not fun. So I know that Heartland has a mission of working, doing works with Texas women. So does this all have a Texas women bend to it?
Yeah, our team is primarily women, and also our whole like creative producer team is entirely women. So Nicole, being a script supervisor, you've been Rosalind as directors, our producing team is all female. But also, a lot of the key women in the show reference their home lives in Texas and how that sort of made them who they are and how that affects the experience they're having right now on the ship. So it's within that vein, but we also, because we're in space, not in Texas, we explore a lot of other areas as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, the capital of Texas to me is a black hole. So perhaps you can just send it there. Sometimes I crack myself up. So this will premiere on YouTube on, I'm assuming, the Heartland's YouTube channel.
Yes.
Is that how people will find it?
Yes. Right now, the best place for information right now is our website.
And give us that email, that website address.
Sure. www.heartlandtheatercollective.com. It's kind of awesome. Long, and theater is R-E, not E-R.
You don't have to say that on our show.
That's okay. Our
list. You only have to say if it's done the other way around. So that's heartlandtheatercollective.com. And it's a really lovely website, and you can find out all sorts of information there. When does this thing kick off? When's the premiere date?
September 12th.
Well, that's right around the corner. Actually, I have to look at my calendar to see when we're actually airing this. We're airing this on the 9th. So a mere 2 days from when people are listening to us right now.
That's enough time for people to get really excited.
Yeah. So that's exciting. So again, we're pre-recording this almost a week before folks are listening to it. Where are you in the process? Are y'all like all, you know, are you editing? Are you in the middle of still creating? What's going on?
We're pretty much, yeah, we got the final sound edit of it yesterday, which was very exciting. So I am finishing up a transcript. So that will be available to folks who want to read along or read instead of listening.
Good for you.
But I think that's maybe the last thing.
Excellent.
which feels wild to say. Yeah.
So I know that it's a radio play, but we can watch it, correct?
Yeah, so our plan is on YouTube to sort of have title cards so you can see the names of characters who are speaking. It might just be a little bit easier to follow along that way, but not really any primary visuals other than that.
Okay, so this is really an audio experience, very much like we're doing right this very second.
Exactly.
See, we're on the cutting edge of post-COVID theatrical.
Who knew we'd be on trend?
Well, that's very exciting. I want to step back, take a moment, and talk about Heartland Theater Collective. How did this get started? It was you and Nicole that started it, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Basically, Nicole and I were both getting ready to graduate from college, and I knew that she wanted to write professionally, and I wanted to direct professionally. And we decided our best opportunity to do that was to make ourselves sound as professional as possible. So we put a little company together. And put on our first production, Dust, back in 2016, I think kind of with the, like, we'll see how this goes, and if it goes well, you know, we'll explore this further, and, you know, and to our surprise, it actually went very, very well.
Yeah, so, you were either nominated or won to be Iden Payne, is that correct?
Nicole was nominated for Best Original Script for Iden, yeah.
Be Iden or Critics Circle, who knows?
Critics,
it's so
table,
confusing.
Might have been. Yeah, one of those.
She was she noticed. Got it was noticed in the city.
But that's great. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so you did this this first piece, and I guess you decided it was so good, you got such good recognition, you had to just keep going.
Yeah. So since then, we've done two other full-length plays, Little Bird a couple of years ago, and then just last fall, The Vineyard, which Rosalind was in. So wonderful. We've also done a little bit of devising. We put together a devised piece for Frontera Fest called Cowgirl Church that actually ended up winning Best of Fest. So that was another, we're going to try devising and see how it goes, and made us feel a lot more confident about this process.
You did that for the Short Fringe?
Yes.
Awesome. And tell us about the name Heartland. How did y'all, how did that come about, and what does it have to do with your mission?
Yeah. So when we were doing our first play, Dust, it was about women in the Dust Bowl, and the sort of location was very important to us, and being young women in Texas, we felt, gave us sort of a certain perspective, especially being in Austin, which is kind of a blue dot in a red state. You know, there was some recognition that historically women had faced a lot of challenges, but it was really striking to work on Dust because we realized a lot of those challenges were still around. So we wanted to tell or convey that we tell very deeply emotional stories, but that are also very much tied to the place that they're in. Mm-hmm. We're always very conscious of sort of trying to make our location within Texas. We've also done like East Texas Bayou and then Central Texas Vineyard, feel very much like a part of the play, like a character of the play. So Heartland just has literally heart and land in it. So tying that, that emotion and location together.
Well, great. Well, we look forward to A, having you on this show often, and B, seeing your work once we're able to get back into the theater again. But in the meantime, folks can have the opportunity to hear you guys with Passage, a new radio play. Mm-hmm. And once again, folks can get information about that at heartlandtheatercollective.com. Marian Kansas and Rosalind Ferris, thank you so much for being on Offstage and on the Air.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having us.
I'll see you later. Great interview with Heartland Theater Collective.
I know, I'm very excited. Space, radio play, combination, galore.
Yep, well, they maybe we could use their sound effects for our Zoom machine.
I know, I'm a little jealous. I'm that's got to be a pretty cool, like, gathering of sound effects they have.
Zoom machines kind of sounded like a 60 Chevy this time.
You know what? Everything needs a tune-up in time. We're new to the Zoom machine. We've only been driving it for a while.
Everything does. I want to talk just briefly at the end of the show about the Rude Mechs and their participation in the Breath Project. I think we talked about this before, but we'd love to see if folks want to participate in that. This is asking people to do a video that lasts for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. This is based on the time that George Floyd was held by the officer with his knee. And it's very interesting. You can head over to the Breath Project, which I believe is breathproject.org, or you can get more information at rudemex.org. They are one of the, or I think they're the only theater in Austin that is participating in this. So it's really an amazing piece. And if you get time to go to the breathproject2020.com and see the, there's a video right on their homepage, which I talked about before, which is just an amazing piece. And it's an example of what kind of pieces you can do for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. So on that note, that is the end of the show.
That's it.
Remember, membership drive month. Please go to koop.org and give generously. Help keep your community radio station alive. We'll be bugging you more later over the next several weeks.
It's very easy. There's a little donate now button, and it's super quick to the point.
It's SQ, super quick. So tune in next week when Nicole and I will look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, folks.
Ciao.